You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Kirby Howell-Baptiste. I was a guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. And my guest today is Oscar Montoya, who improv fans might know from the UCB Harold team Nomi Malone, and also from the Moore team Sugar. Hey, Oscar.
Hi.
Oscar, why were you Oscar is stifling a laugh right now. Why is that so funny?
I feel so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. We're on the same Harold team. For those of you, if you weren't listening to the last one, Oscar and I are both on Nomi Malone.
That's right, yeah.
You feel proud of me for...
You're like hosting a show? I love it. Look at Kirby.
Oh, that's so sweet.
She's great.
Thank you. Do you feel like that's like how you are in general? Like you're quite paternal?
Yeah. Yeah, all the time. Also, I don't know. I think, especially people on my team, I'm just so proud of them.
Yeah.
I'm also the oldest person on the team. So I think it is definitely a dad instinct to look at my children. That's what a weird thing to say.
But you look the youngest.
Yes, I do.
So Oscar, you were saying about your team. This is your first Harold team.
That's right. Yeah.
And before that, what was your experience? Because you're a transplant, obviously, like me, but you're one of the more common transplants as in New York
right.
to LA.
Yeah. So I moved to LA a year and a half ago in March. I didn't do UCB in New York though. So this is my first Harold team, period.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy just getting just accustomed to the LA UCB style and doing Harold, you know what I mean? In a couple of months. But it's been such a amazing experience and I love my team so much and I love doing Harold are so fun, you know?
Yeah. So explain how that happened so people don't think that you just moved here and were like, hey, I want to be on a Harold team and they put you on.
That's exactly
no
what happened. No, I'm kidding. No. So my whole history of doing improv to begin with was I used to be a dancer before I did anything comedy related. And as a dancer, I had kind of a stage fright issue and mm-hmm. I had social anxiety as well. And my roommate at the time recommended I take an improv class just to get out of my shell a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I took a UCB 101 class and I was terrible at it. But I felt it was helping me a lot just to be more comfortable and trusting in myself.
Yeah.
And it changed everything. And then you get the bug and, you stick with it, and so here I am.
Yeah. You said you get the bug. What would you say, can you describe, the bug? Because we all talk about that.
Oh, yeah, the bug.
What is the bug?
So the improv bug is, there's something really incredible about creating a universe that you and 7, 8, 4, 3, 1 other person is creating
more numbers, with you. More numbers.
5, 4, 3, 12, 50. It's kind of it's magical. Every time you do something great, you're just creating something from nothing. The amount of power we have is kind of staggering a little bit. We do it all the time. You perform a lot, I know that, and you rehearse a lot as well. So we're constantly performing, but the magic with improv is that we're responsible for our own script.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something really cool about that, you know? And I've never experienced anything like that. Mainly because I never really performed I never acted before either. Yeah. So this was like my first time really like acting or like being in front of a group of people, and I didn't have to dance to entertain them.
Yeah.
I sounded like a stripper there, I feel like.
I wish.
No, I wish I could do that. I can't even cling onto a pole.
Hey, you can take your clothes off. You can be a stripper.
That's true. That's true. I think there's something really cool about like just making stuff up with someone else and creating worlds and stuff. And it's addictive, mm-hmm. you know? And you just want to keep doing it over and over and over because it's just fun, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. It is work, you know? I mean, like, even, like, handling the Herald is work, you know, because there is training involved. But I think I'm at this point right now where every time I perform, it's, like, incredibly fun for me.
So you talked about – so for most people, including myself, my way of coming to improv was, like, I was an actor first, or at least I was, like, studying that at home.
Like a dramatic actor?
Mm-hmm. Ah. Like, I'd done, like, theater and stuff like that. Like, not notable or anything like that. But you say that you were dancing. Did you find acting through improv? Did you always want to be an actor, but you didn't have the – okay.
No, not at all. I suffered from stage fright, so I had like severe social anxiety around people.
Okay, but real quick. Yeah. So just in that as well, to add a little more, is there a reason why that stage fright didn't affect you dancing?
Oh, it did.
Oh, okay.
It did, yeah. Like sometimes I would like sabotage myself from getting leads in parts because I would have to do a solo, mm-hmm. and I did not want to do that. Like that intimidated me a lot.
Yeah.
And actually that's, you know, wow, I just thought of this right now, but maybe the reason why I love improv so much is because it is part of a group dynamic. Mm-hmm. You know, there are no moments really the way that I think about it, there really aren't moments where you're just like, it's just you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the difference between doing something like stand up or like, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's part of a group. Like, it's impressive when a group comes up with a really solid improv show.
Yeah.
And I guess that's like correlates itself to like having a really good dance troupe, you know? But I don't know if I answered your question.
No. That absolutely did. So acting was like you did improv, you loved it, and then that's sort of what guided you towards like more traditional acting.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now, I act now. It's so weird to say that out loud. Because you're like, oh, I guess I'm an actor now. Right?
Someone asked me this, and I didn't know how to answer it, but they were like, do you call yourself a comedian? Like, would you say, I'm a comedian?
Do you say you're a comedian or
do
you say you're an actor?
Well, I if someone asked me, I'll say an actor. But even separately, like within this world of people being like, are you a comedian? Because when I think of comedians, I think of people that are like, way before me and so much better than me. And you know what I mean? Like, they're like...
Wait, so are you saying like comedians are like old-fashioned or
no,
something?
No, I just think of like, to me, it's such a huge title that I don't feel I have earned. So I wonder, do you say like... Because we are, I guess.
That's interesting.
But like, to be like, would you say you're a comedian?
I think the exact opposite of you.
Ah.
I think being an actor holds like so much more responsibility than I don't think I can like... claim yet.
Wow.
But I feel like I can claim, I'm more comfortable claiming comedian than I am actor. There's a sense of like, yeah, like, oh, you're an actor. You're like it. You've like trained and you know how to cry on cue and like, I don't know how to do that. You know what I mean? But comedian is like being able to entertain. Can I entertain? And I mean, I think the answer is yes, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's so funny. Yeah. Because I would never call myself an actor.
Wow.
But I always say comedian when people are like, what do you do, you know? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, speaking of acting, but going back to the Herald, mm-hmm. And you know, obviously you had like a non-traditional sort of path here. Like you weren't, not only were you not part of like the coming up in LA, you weren't at the UCB, you did class at UCB New York, but you weren't on a team there first.
Right, exactly.
How does the Herald compare? Because you were at the Magnet before.
I was at the Magnet and the People's Improv Theater, yeah.
Right, and then how does that compare switching to something that is so struck? Because were you doing Herald's there or were
you?
No. Switching to something that is like so heavily structured.
Yes, exactly. And I think also, you know, to add on to that, the stuff that I was doing in New York was so loosey-goosey, for lack of a better term. There was a team that I was on at the Pit called Borealis, and our form was essentially a silent soundtrack form.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were a weekend team, so, I mean, and it was great. People came to see us and stuff like that, but it was like the most loose, felt like more like a dance, interpretive dance team than like an improv team, you know? And at the Magnet, we like just made up a form. We like devised a form. They were like, here are all the tools that you have. Come up with a form and perform it. You know what I mean? And I also did musical improv at the Magnet. And even in the musical improv world, I came up, well, not me, but our team, Aquarius, came up with like different forms of the musical improv. And I think it's interesting because musical improv has a strong narrative form.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the Harold is like you want to avoid plot. You want to avoid narrative. Like that's not what you want to do. So it is interesting for, 3 years of my life in New York? That's all I did. I did narrative-based improv or I did incredibly organic, non-linear improv, you know? So then coming to L.A. and then like doing stuff like the Harold is like, whoa, you know, you're just like, oh my gosh, there's like, it's rigid, it's a building, it's a solid structure, you know, but there's something fun, it's like doing a crossword puzzle, I mean, not a crossword, but just like literally a puzzle, and it's fun to see if you get it right or not, you know,
it's so funny that you say that, because it being on a team with you, you feel like, it feels so fluid, you doing a Harold. It does not feel like...
Thank you. That's a huge comp. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's something I'm just learning, is sort of like how organic it was for you before.
Right.
And to that, because I was actually just talking about like loving organic stuff. I certainly haven't come from, or haven't done as much as it sounds like you have done. Do you still enjoy that stuff? I mean, like, because it, again, like... It's all improv,
yeah.
But in the same way that it's all acting, like it's all this, it's all one thing, but it's so different. So how does that compare for you?
You know, it's really funny, and like actually, like I do want to talk to you about this on like.
I mean, should it be something that we talk about privately or?
No. Okay, I mean, it's
I actually do want to talk to you. I've been meaning to text you.
We'll talk about that later.
No.
But the idea of like organic play and the place it has in a Harold, as in the main question being like, is there a place for organic play in a Harold? And I mean, I think there is, but I think right now where I am in my like Harold development stage, I am very focused on like premise based gameplay. Like that's really like a thing of mine that I'm like, I need to do this. I need to, like, even my group games are, like, very premise-based, you know? And it's because it's not something that, like, comes natural to me anyway, but it's something that I'm like, I want to work on this. Like, I want to really get better at it. And so, like, my question to you is, like, do you think there is a place for that kind of organic play?
Yeah, I absolutely think there is, because I think that part of doing any art form is seeing where that art form can go rather than just being like, we learn this thing. It's just like in actual fine art, you learn the rules so you can break the rules. Like every, you know, like Picasso, like everyone is trained and then they break the
Basquiat,
rules.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Basquiat, exactly. Perfect example. But I think that what probably happens in improv is we probably think we learn the rules quicker than we do. Mm. So, you know, the whole, like you learn the rules so you can break the rules. I would love to do more organic stuff.
Yeah.
I think I'm ready to, but I'm probably not. I need to solidify I need to know what I'm doing so confidently and so like know what I'm doing in a way that is easy to repeat.
Yes.
Consistently.
Yes.
Before I can then add to it. So I think there is room. I think that first you need to master doing the thing that you're doing right. If that's the Harold, Harold.
You're right.
And then let's completely break it up and go crazy and have like organic transition. If you look at, like for me, I look at a team like Fwand and they are so great at that.
Right.
Like they know what they're doing. So like I saw them last year at DCM, mm-hmm. and they weren't doing a Harold, but they definitely had games that recurred and, right. And things. But they know what they're doing so well that when they break it up, it's mind blowing, and then put it back together.
Right.
I just think that maybe we all run before we walk.
Yeah.
And that's also just excitement. That's just like I love doing this thing, and I've
exactly.
been also all of us have been doing it for a long time.
Right.
So sometimes time is a substitute for experience.
That's true.
Or for knowledge.
You know,
or like you think it is.
Yeah, and also like you brought something up that was interesting about that idea of like, well, when do we stop being students?
Mm.
And start, I mean, what's the next step? Are we like always students?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, I feel like I am both. I'm in this
Absolutely.
Like, I feel like I'm definitely still a student in the form.
Yeah.
And I want to do right by the form. I'm not there to like place any bombs, you know what I mean? Improv bombs or anything like that. Like, that's not what I came
not dropping
to Harold
improv
on.
Bombs.
I don't want to do that on Harold night. Like, I definitely don't want to do that, right? But I've been doing this for a long time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think like I think I'm comfortable with my comedic voice where I can allow myself to kind of color a little bit outside the lines, you
yeah.
know? Like a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like I like being a little bit of a rapscallion sometimes
yeah.
on stage. Like there's something fun about that.
Yeah.
You know? That isn't necessarily like a grade A student necessarily should do.
Yeah.
But there is something about like testing the limits about where this form can go. And
mm-hmm.
I think a team like Fwan, for example, does that a lot.
Yeah.
Like they really try to like bend the bars of the form,
mm-hmm.
but still respect it. And I think
yes.
that's the sign of like the best teams, not
yeah.
just Harold, but like any form at all. Like
yeah.
those are the best teams. The teams that you see and you're like, okay, I know this form, but this team does this form like in a way that I would never think to do. And I want to get there. Like, oh my gosh, I like want to get there.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like not to brag or anything, because I didn't come here to do that either. But like, I think Nomi Malone has had some shows that I felt like, yes, I think we were able to color a little bit outside the lines
mm-hmm.
and still respect the form. And we did a show that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And different and felt like us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Speaking, you were saying about like finding your voice. Do you feel like you have a clear voice? Because I think that's something that like we talk about a lot in sketch, or we talk about a lot in terms of writers. Like
yeah.
this person very much has a voice because in sketch it's repeatable, and it's repeatable in improv, but it's repeatable in a very marked way. Like all the sketches from this, like if you send a packet,
right.
then these sketches are like this is this person's voice,
right? Like this is a Kirby sketch for sure.
Yes,
this
classic.
Is a, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Do you feel like you have that voice? You think you have like a classic Oscar voice
I think
in
so.
Your improv? And if you do, can you pinpoint it?
Ooh, that's a great question. My immediate answer is yes, but I think it depends on what form I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Well, you know, there's like those like go-tos, you know what I mean? Like, oh, here are like characters that I like to play or
mm-hmm.
like here. Wow, this is it's interesting because what happens a lot right now in like my improv journey, I'm in this place where I have I think my comedic voice is like on the sillier side
mm.
and like very physical. That's been like a big thing, of course, like since forever. And like, yeah, again, like a little bit on the sillier side, wacky, like a little bit on the wackadoo side.
Yeah.
But I think that there's something about doing a Harold that has like changed a little bit about the way that I play. I don't think that I play as wackadoo
yeah.
as I used to when I started doing improv like way back when, you know, or like when I do, for example, like musical improv.
Mm-hmm.
I think with a Harold. And I feel like there's space in a Harold for players to be completely wackadoo and crazy and like be fine. But because I think I'm like trying to understand it, that I'm like trying to be like, I want to see if I can like do a Harold where like I play the straight person a lot, or like, do you know what I mean? Or
mm-hmm.
like, or like ground this in a very specific way that isn't necessarily my go-to, but I want to see if I can do this, which is cool. Like there's something cool about like figuring out a way to analyze the Harold.
Yeah.
You know? Which I normally wouldn't do if I wasn't doing a Harold. Like like in a, for example, like in a Borealis show and a like kind of like a incredibly organic improv team, I would probably tell my brain to shut up. Mm. Like that's my big MO, like just to really act on instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can do that with a Harold.
I feel like you have to be a little more intellectual.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not necessarily in a like book smart way, but just in a way that's like you have to think about things. Also, that makes sense because you have to think about them so that you can continue to play it for a 30-minute show.
Exactly. Or, yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. And there's something about like not like your impulsive self isn't necessarily like the one that's going to help you out in the end.
Yeah.
With a Harold, you know? Like it might mess up people on your team, you know, if you are just like, whatever, I'm going to do this thing because my body says so, mm-hmm. you know? But it might just come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it might just be the craziest thing ever, you know? So I think there is a little bit more of like analyzing. Not really thinking, just analyzing. And listening more. Mm-hmm. I mean, listening should be fundamental, obviously. But I think with the Harold, there is a little bit more of like, okay, let's do a little bit more brain work,
mm-hmm.
and then we can act out, and then see where it goes.
Like a puzzle, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah, like a puzzle. Yeah.
Speaking of analyzing, do you feel comfortable? Because this is something that I was asked, and also something that I'm sort of seeing, especially with, because Harold and Maud Knights are sort of an extension of. The classes that are done here, it's like when you're in drama school, you learn things and then they say go and watch theatre shows so that you can see those things in action.
Right.
And I feel like Harold and Maud are like that. It's like you learn these things and then now go and see people who are doing it presumably better than you're doing it in class.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you know, obviously they should be. Why? Do you feel comfortable, like, not just on stage, but does it make you feel uncomfortable or comfortable? Or what does it make you feel that someone will be listening to this podcast in like Denmark and have never have taken a UCB class, have probably bought all the books, watched a bunch of stuff on YouTube, but they will be listening to what you say to get like specific insight from a UCB performer?
No pressure.
Well, like how does that make you feel? Do you feel like qualified or how do you, you know, because like that is how it is. Like people who have they've never seen a show in real life.
Yeah, yeah. I think... I think there's very few people in this world that I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes,
mm-hmm.
That I would be like, this is the voice of improv.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that happens a lot. I look at performers and I'm like, that person is great at this thing that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, voice. Voice is like so important, I think, in improv
mm-hmm.
or performing. Just your own comedic voice. I think that's essential.
Yeah.
You will not be successful if you try to do all the quote unquote right things all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And I think like the people in Denmark listening to me. Hi, people in Denmark.
Especially Denmark. Yeah. Only Denmark.
Only Denmark. This is a huge Denmark podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to all the Danes.
Yeah. Hey guys. I think they'll just look at, they'll listen to me and be like, oh, that's like a very unique point of view
mm-hmm.
on comedy, on improvisational theater, on the Harold, on being at UCB, on being on a house team. Because we're not the same person. I mean, like, we are so different.
Yeah.
Our approaches to doing improv are so different, but that's what makes it so great.
You mean
great.
You and everyone else, not you and Danish people?
No. Yeah, I want to alienate myself from the Danes as far as possible.
Yes, so does England.
Is there beef between?
No, I meant Brexit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Silly
ass. Topical.
Yeah, well, 2 weeks ago, but yeah. Well, that was the point you were making. well, speaking of the team, this is your first Harold team. I presume this is the most amount of people you've been on a team with. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because it's a lot. You know, like most indie teams cannot get 8 people together to be consistent.
Right.
How has that been, being on a Harold team, being around so many people? Because
it's
you
crazy.
Are thrown together. And also, you've never met half of us because you're from New York. Maybe more than half of us.
Yeah, I only knew one person before.
Right.
And her name was Amy Hessler.
Yeah.
And she's a dancer.
Yeah.
And that's how I know her.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't know her as a comedian. I knew her as a dancer. So it's crazy that we got paired on the same team together.
Yeah.
But the thing about a house team, it's crazy. Being on a house team is like so insane because it's a committee of people assigning these eight random people that they might or might not know. All those people might or might not know who they are. And they're like, you have a year or maybe sometimes even less than that to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Figure it out. Whatever that means to you, just like figure it out, you know? And the, I mean, the pressure is high. Like there is a bit of like, dang, I gotta like make something work, you know, or else I might not be here next year. But to me, it's crazy because, and this is no secret at all. I've told, I mean, I tell everyone on Nomi this, but like Nomi is like the team. I love this team so much and it's absolutely insane that eight random people have come together and formed such a bond, I think, so quickly.
Yeah.
You know? From day one, it just felt right. And I've been on house teams at other theaters that, I mean, I've been on a house team in a theater for 4 years and none of the teams stuck.
Yeah.
You know? So it's crazy to me that it's just like, these are friends of, like, everyone on Nomi is a friend of mine that I have the pleasure and honor to be doing Harold's with once a week.
Yeah.
You know? It's crazy. It's crazy. When does that ever happen?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to like a lot of people. And
yeah.
Especially eight at random.
People. Yeah.
Yeah.
Random people.
Yeah.
And not just as people, but as performers as well.
Because
that's important too. You can like someone and be like, oh, I can't do scenes with this person at all.
Yeah.
You know? But I think like every single person on this team, I'm like, oh my gosh, I like respect. It's a crazy feeling to be like, whoa, everyone on this team is the funniest person I've ever met. How is this possible?
Yeah.
It's illogical, you know?
Yeah.
But it's there. It's the truth, you know? Everyone on that team is strong.
Obviously you are like very close. You love this team. If there was, it just got me thinking about like, you know how you're saying it's insane being around like seven other people that you love and respect and like admire their style of playing. Is there like, if you could do with anyone past, present, you know, if you could do a two man, like 15 minute set.
Gandhi.
Who?
Gandhi.
He was real funny. Did you hear about that one when he took he lost a shoe in the train, he threw the other one out? What a riot. If there was anyone that you could do, I bet Gandhi was not funny at all.
Yeah, but he'd be fun to watch doing improv. He'd just be like,
oh,
what's
my
happening?
Gosh. Gandhi doing improv, he would be like, okay, it is what it is.
I guess so. Or maybe he'd just be like, always arguing with people all the time.
Do you know that Gandhi may have been terrible? Now, this may have
yes,
taken up.
As a person,
as a human being. Yeah. Same as Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa.
That's what I heard too,
it's so funny that I'm quicker to believe. Like, I when I'm like, Mother Teresa, when someone was like, she's terrible, and, you know, there's articles, there's things, there's research, I'm like, yeah, she's terrible, of course. But Gandhi, I don't know. I think it's nothing to do with him being a man. I think it's to do with the fact that he, in my mind, I knew about Gandhi from such a young age being so amazing that's a hard one to shake. Mother Teresa also also have more of a problem with like Catholicism.
Yes.
Being like, you tell me someone in Catholicism is not great. I'm like, okay.
Interesting.
Cool. But yeah, might have been terrible too. So
I think
never do improv with your heroes.
No, that's true. Hey, they might disappoint you.
But besides Gandhi, who would obviously be, who would pretend he was good at improv, but wouldn't be. Because that was his whole thing, being
a
liar.
He was just a hog, just a huge hog.
Yeah.
He'd like tag you out every
second.
Yes,
every scene with him just coming on stage, preaching about something, or he would just sit there silently. Yeah. It would always be a sit-in. Gandhi, come on. Yeah. You got your fucking salt? Get out of here.
He'd only do scenes about himself that happened to him in real life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Every scene would start with, this one time I killed this guy.
Oh, now more than ever, I want Gandhi to do that with me.
But is there anyone that you really look up to that you're like, it doesn't even have to be, you know, if people want to be like, oh, this person 30 years ago, it doesn't have to be Del Close or anyone like that. I just mean anyone that you're like, God, I would love to do two person improv with that person.
You know, yes, yes, and I did, and I have, and it was the most amazing thing ever. So when I did improv back in New York mm-hmm. at the Pit. My first coach ever was Jessica Biel Allen.
Oh, yeah.
And she, she's my hero in the way that she plays. She plays with such ferocity.
Yeah.
And passion. Everything matters to her. Nothing is tossed aside at all.
Yeah.
And like, how can someone play with such passion all the time? I would watch her and like literally get life from her on stage. And I would look at her and be like, I want to be like her. Mm-hmm. Like, she is someone that I want to be like. And then she coached me. She tore me a new asshole all the time. You know, she was like really hard on me, which I loved, you know.
Yeah.
And I felt like this bond, right? But she was a teacher. She was like on this level that I placed that I was like, she's untouchable.
Yeah.
There's never, it will never happen in a million years where I will ever play with her. Fast forward to like maybe, 4 months ago? I literally just asked her to do a two-person show. And she said yes, and I died. And then I expected her to not show up at all, and she showed up, and I died again. And then we did the show, and it was so amazing, and I died a third time after. Yeah. It was incredible. It really felt
like...
By died,
you mean orgasm, like le petit muet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I died orgasmically. Yes, yeah. yes. Jess, I hope you're listening
orgasm
to this.
Deadly.
I love her. She's like... one of the best people I've ever... She's honestly, truly, like, the reason why I... And also, like, because she's also... She's born in Colombia, and so was I. Like, there was, like, that thing of, mm-hmm. like, oh, she's, like, you know, different.
Yeah.
You know, she stood out. Like, I felt like I was different in a time where improv class was literally... Everybody looked exactly the same, and then there was, like, one girl in class and me.
Yeah.
You know? So, It was great to see the other perform and have like a totally different point of view than everyone else. And she's still, I mean, she's incredible. She's amazing.
I feel like that. I remember when I first started doing improv and the teams I was watching, and they're all great teams, mm-hmm. but they were all white teams. And I remember seeing Winslow and then being like, whoa!
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing Echo and thinking he was... I remember the first show I saw Echo at. Like, I remember the scene. Mm-hmm. I know Dan, they were doing this scene where no one wanted to say the N-word. Or, like, his name was... he made his name Niggerella or something like that. It was so good. And Dan, who is amazing, did this great move of coming out as, like, a barista and holding this cup up and being like, and then Echo was like, say it. He, like, said, I have a drink for whatever. And Echo was like, say it. And Dan was like, if you know this is your name, I'm carrying. He was like, you take this drink. And it was amazing. It was the first show I ever saw where, like, it was the first show I'd seen any people of color, let alone two, in one team.
Yeah.
It was the first show that, to me, support, the idea of support locked in. Not that I had never seen people support. I'd always seen people support.
Mm-hmm.
But to see people support, like, this is a taboo. This is not a word that most of the team can say.
But they still did it. They didn't give up.
They didn't give up. Like, and he was saying it, and like no one else did say it, but they supported it. Like, they weren't like, that's not your name. Your name is Nigella. Like, they just like, and it was so good. And honestly, I don't remember much more about that show, really, besides that.
But all it takes is just one
group game.
Moment.
All it takes is that moment. But you were speaking about, so like.
But also, I wanted to say too that like when I got put on Nomi Malone, that was the first time where I was placed on a house team where I wasn't the only person of color on the team.
Oh, yeah.
So I saw you and I was like, oh, I'm not the only person of color.
They made a
and
mistake.
I know. I was like, wait, whoa, what? No tokens? Huh? What? It was crazy.
Yeah.
I freaked out. I was like, it's like, oh my gosh, now we've reached the progressive age of improvisational comedy, you know?
Yeah.
And it meant so much to be placed on a team with someone else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting generationally for people who are coming up now,
mm-hmm.
they who are watching, who are in classes, who are maybe watching us, the landscape of...
Yeah.
Well, you know this. Like, you can talk about maybe a little bit about how that landscape's changed, because even me, who I've been at UCB since the end of 2012 was my first class. October 2012 was my 101 class. And the landscape in that 4 years has changed
Drastically. Yeah. It's amazing. It's kind of incredible. Looking at Harold Night right now and seeing the amount of diversity there is across, just across the board, is like unbelievable. Mm. Not, I mean, like, not something, you know, like when I was first taking improv classes, it was intimidating because, and it's, I mean, it wasn't always like the other people doing it to me, making me like aware. I mean, that's not true. There were people where I would do scenes and they would be like, "You're of color, right? Mm-hmm. You're gay, right?" And it was something that I was like, well, in this scene, I'm playing a straight white man.
Yeah.
Sir, you know? And so, like, there was that, like, put upon thing. But sometimes you put yourself upon, too. I don't know if that made any sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where you're just, like, so aware that you're different.
Yeah.
You know? You dress different. You look different. You act different. So you are different and you will always be different, you know? And then there was, like, that natural progression where people, like, have practice groups, and I never got asked, mainly because I was really bad. But like in my brain, I was just like, oh gosh, it's like, of course, it's like a team full of these white dudes, you know, like, of course they would never ask me to do it, you know? So like now, looking at it now and being like, there's variety here. There is comedic voices here, not just a comedic voice. There's voices, and that's important. And we're still playing by the rules. It's not like we're reinventing, you know what I mean? It's not like we're like burning down Del Close's flag or anything like that, being like, we've changed the form.
Yeah.
Brown people on stage, you know what I mean? Like, no, we're fine. We're okay. We're doing it, and we're doing it well, you know?
That's a great. You should have been chanting that at the Black Lives Matter rally.
I should have,
You should have been saying, we're fine. We didn't burn the flag.
You guys.
You guys, and we're doing it well.
Night.
We should have made that Black Lives Matter rally about Harold Night.
I know, we should have. Dang it.
You were talking about practice groups. That's a thing that I think can be daunting for people. I remember my first practice group, which I loved, and I still know some of the people. I know more people from my like second one, which is sort of like bled into just like my friends. But the idea of like being asked to be on a landscape to sort of like, I was gonna say negotiate, that's not, I'm mixing metaphors, a landscape to traverse, I don't know, either putting together practice groups or...
Have you ever put together a practice group?
Yeah, I often, like I'm the organizer, but also there have been times where you're in a class, I remember being in a class with one person I thought was really good and he put together practice and didn't ask me, and that was like a real blow.
Ooh, yeah.
So can you talk about
that?
It really sucks.
It always sucks.
Like, it doesn't mean anything, but it's so funny how nothing means anything except in the moment where it means everything. Now I'm like, who is that guy? And not to be like, but it is literally like, I do not know that guy.
Who that is. But you
like,
were
I
hurt.
I know who he is, but I was hurt because he was, I felt like he was one of the best in the class and I didn't get asked to be on that thing. And I thought I was pretty good and that like stings.
Yeah. I think also like the important thing is like, you can't do improv really by yourself. Like you can't form a practice group with just you.
No.
That would be weird, you know?
Gandhi.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's his whole deal.
But like, yeah, there are people who do solo improv and that's fine. But like the way that I like doing it, just thinking about that terrifies me so much.
Yeah.
You know
putting
what I mean?
Together a practice group?
No, just like doing improv by yourself.
Oh,
That's like so not my deal at all. Like that's woof. Woo. That's too much. But the thing is, to form a practice group, you need a group, you know? And you always want to be at, it's like, you know, it's an ego thing. But I think me, like, going through classes, I never expected to be asked. And I didn't because I was one of the worst people in the class.
When did that change?
That changed when I stopped caring about how to be funny. Because I think I was I was fear-driven. Everything was out of fear. So, like, I remember my first two levels at UCB was, like if we were to be doing a scene together, like, you would say something. Like, for example, like, you'd initiate and you'd say,
"Oh, hey, I grabbed those carrots you wanted from the store."
And then I would say, after, like, a long pause, Yeah, you got the carrots from the store.
So you were just yes and no and?
Yep. Because I was so scared that all of my offers were going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Or like not funny.
Yeah.
You know? So everything was like fear, like everything was fear obsessed, you know?
Yeah.
I'd always be the last one to go. Sometimes I wouldn't even go.
Yeah.
Because the teacher, I think, would just like give up and be like, ugh, you know, never mind, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the moment where everything changed was when I was like, I could be my, like, oh, like, how would I respond to that?
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw, like, people responding to that. And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm contributing here.
Yeah. Well, let's do that again. Oh, hey, I got those carrots from the store that you asked for.
Yeah, thanks. I think this vegetarian thing is going to work out okay.
Yeah, that's why you're on the Harold team. That was really good.
Yeah,
really
good. There we go. That's great. And then the edit, thing. And that's it. Yeah, that's it.
Can't think of a single dish that would involve carrots.
Mm-hmm. Actually,
couldn't
no.
have said coleslaw.
Candied carrots? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Candied carrots?
Yeah, they do like a.
Not is that any different sugar. Than candied yams?
I think it's pretty similar.
That sounds. I've got a little sick thinking about candied carrots.
Well, it's like you glaze. I say they're more glazed carrots.
Is that a Thanksgiving thing?
Could be an anytime thing.
Who eats that?
Me. I'm a vegan, so
you eat candied carrots?
Not candied, glazed.
Oh, that still sounds so weird.
Well, you've never had them, I guess.
Okay, well, make them and then they'll have them.
I'll make a vegetarian thing.
Yeah, vegetarians, they only eat carrots, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. But anyway, so there we go. So like, you know, I would start...
When you realize that your voice was valid.
Yes, yes. My voice was valid and different and unusual, you know? And then that bled into like, well, let's start like creating characters and like believing the characters. And that's like the beginning of acting, of like performing, you know? And then I got really swept up in the whole character thing of like, ooh, I'm going to do this, like, blah, blah, blah. This is my philosophy, you know? And then it all changed. Everything changed. And then thinking like, well, what if I incorporate some of like my dance stuff, my physical stuff? Because that's the other thing, watching shows and seeing two people just standing talking to each other. It would drive me absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And I just thought like, what if I moved around more? What if? You know, I, you know, did stuff like I just didn't go to the fridge and like left the room, went to the bathroom and still had the scene, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and then that changed.
So you're doing
changed.
Something unique and people are like, well, that's what we need.
Right.
That's what we would like.
Well, that took, and even after that, it took a while, you know?
It sounds like you had it sounds like you sort of were in a cocoon and you sort of like broke out
yes,
of it.
Yes, yes. But it all took a very long time. That whole process was like slow.
Mm.
To me, it felt like it was slow. Like I just like wasn't able to get out of my shell and like blah, blah, you know what I mean? And like slowly I was able to just get new pieces of armor, so to speak, in order to go to battle. And that analogy applies to the battlefield being... The improv stage. Wow, that was the weakest analogy.
No.
Oh, boy.
Improv's a battlefield. It's really interesting because before I was talking about some people are terrible, like in everything. Like you watch American Idol and you're just like, that person doesn't know they're a terrible singer. Like
yes.
Some people in improv are just not, this is not their thing.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting for you to sit here and someone might have, I might have been in a class with you and just been like, this guy should do something different. But
yes.
It might just be that, we're all coming from different places. I have always been, I would consider myself like an extroverted introvert.
Mm-hmm.
I love to perform and do all that. But then like,
yeah,
yes,
you need your space.
I need a lot of
space.
Like yesterday I put my phone on airplane mode and sat at home all day.
Yeah.
Like I needed contact from
you
no
are very
one.
Like, yeah, you,
yeah.
You like doing stuff by yourself.
Well, yes, a lot.
You go to movies by yourself.
Movies on my own,
which I think is the weirdest thing,
live on my own, love it. Like I need intense
amounts
of alone time.
Right.
But it's interesting to see that you could have been that person in the class who people were like, that guy should not do it.
Yeah,
because
I definitely
inside,
was.
But what my question is that like, although you weren't great, there was a reason for it. Did you still love it? Were you still like, I still love this, that you weren't that person who was just like, ugh, I'll do it anyway. Like you still wanted to do
maybe
it.
Maybe love isn't the right word. I think what it was is I felt it changing me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because I mean, like, I still, a lot of people don't believe this, but I do still suffer from social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And there are moments where I get, you know this, like sometimes I get panicky and like stressed out about people and like it's hard. And sometimes I do get stage fright still.
Yeah.
But I think doing improv has, I mean, this is the corniest thing ever, but it has changed my life. It's changed what I've become, what I've chosen to do with my life. And it all stems from the confidence thing.
Yeah.
You know, because when I first started, I didn't have the confidence other people had because everything was shut down. Everything I said was shut down. And I just didn't think I was valid. Like me being like a weird brown gay dude doing improv comedy wasn't valid.
Yeah.
And then slowly I realized like, well, my voice is worth something. And so let's explore that a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then I found people being like, we love you because you don't think like me.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, that weird thing that you were shy and like uncomfortable about and like didn't want to tell anybody. Like, we love that about you. And that's what it took me to really define my comedic voice. Because you see people, I mean, like, I see people all the time who are just like either funny, but I can tell that it's like, this is not who you are.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't feel genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Or people who are just like so, quote unquote, terrible, have no, like, they don't have any stage presence, like, mm-hmm. no sort of comedic ability whatsoever. But after a couple of years, like, they start defining themselves more and more and more,
yeah.
you know? And there is something to be said about, like, the practice of it.
Yeah.
You do it enough that you just get completely confident and comfortable in what you do.
Yeah. It's interesting you were talking about, you know, like, being, like, a brown man with a voice, and there's another brown man who had a voice, and his name was Gandhi. And
did you know that in Gandhi's 101 class, he was the only brown person, and he was like, I can't do this.
Well, of
and,
course.
And then he decided, you know, to do non-violent peace.
Yeah, and that's because his 101 class was British occupied India.
Exactly.
So he was
exactly,
only,
exactly. Yeah. So now, yeah, exactly. So don't ask him to be on a team if you're...
God, he's such a hog.
It took him forever to develop his voice. Did you know that?
Yeah.
He has a practice group going on.
Yeah, he was too busy praying or whatever.
Too busy not eating.
Too busy trying to get thin. Gandhi, you can do whatever. You can be whoever you want. That's a beautiful thing about improv. Look however you want. I joke, but I do think that is a wonderful thing. We were talking about like race and being different. I found, and I had written this actually in my, I think in my diversity application that like there will never be an acting job where I will be cast as a white woman ever, because also race bending doesn't go that way.
Exactly. It doesn't bend backwards, baby.
Yeah, it doesn't bend backwards. Angelina Jolie will be cast as black and
She has.
That's what I'm saying, she has. And Scarlett Johansson is a wonderful Asian actress. Yeah.
Believable, truly believable.
Yeah. But I found that when I came to UCB, if I stood in a scene and was like, I'm George Bush, mm-hmm. you know, a white American male, mm-hmm. then that was accepted. I'm George Bush in this scene, and no one would go, no, you're not. You, how can you be? You're a black woman. Because that to me was like a big thing that made me, I think, love improv. Because it was such respite from the real world. In the real world, especially when I just started out here, it was just like commercials and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's only how you look. Like,
yes.
Like in a commercial audition, you don't even go in the room with a white guy as a black woman because they're like,
no way, never.
Don't try and do this to us. Mm-mm. What is this, Cheerios?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So I think it's really interesting that you were saying about finding confidence. It makes mm-hmm. sense that you would find confidence through improv, or at least through UCB style of improv, because I know other places are like, you will be cast as this, so act like this.
Yes.
Because you literally get to not be put in a box.
And here's what I have to say about that. And actually, that's a really good thing that you bring up. And one of my biggest like issues with improv nowadays, I think we're like totally fine and great in terms of like ethnic. I mean, I don't want to say fine and great. There could be some improvements made. Yeah. But I also think that, like,
we've made steps.
We've made big steps, big steps, you know? And I think we can, in improv, the magic is I could play anything I want to play.
Yeah.
And I can establish that reality. And you can't deny that reality. That would just be being an asshole. Like, that would be bad improv.
Yeah.
If you denied the fact that I was playing George Bush, you know? But what I've seen and what I actually really love about UCB is the fact that I truly do feel like I'm being myself on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though,
whatever
even if
form
I'm playing,
that takes.
Yeah, whatever form that takes, I truly feel like me is enough. Like, I can be me. There's no other version of me that I can be. And that extends to even, as this sounds really dumb, but it's not at all, but even dressing how I want to dress.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
There are theaters that have, restriction on how you dress, and they have like a dress code. And I hate it. I hate it. I hate dressing up. Like, I hate like dressing up the way that if I don't want to dress like that, I don't want to dress like that,
yeah.
You know? And it's because of the believability of improv. Like, no one's going to take you seriously if you're wearing shorts and a t-shirt. So wear this suit and, button up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then people will take you seriously. Then you can play whatever you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I call bullshit on that. I call bullshit on that so hard. Because there's nothing better than to see all types of people do improv.
Absolutely.
There's
yeah.
nothing better than watching people literally off the streets getting on stage and doing what you love to do. You know?
And that sort of speaks to the fun of it. It's like, this isn't a corporate catering gig. Like,
no.
I shouldn't have to. I mean, obviously, there's like, I want to be comfortable on stage.
Well, yes.
So, like, I'm not going to wear a skirt because I don't want, you know, there could be a scene where someone picks me up or whatever.
Right, right.
Like, I want to feel comfortable. But if I'm dressed in a way that I feel comfortable.
Exactly.
You know, I'm going to also perform better. Like, if someone was like, actually, you need to wear, everyone wears black jeans mm-hmm. and a black button-up shirt. If I don't feel comfortable in the things I'm wearing,
right.
I won't feel as comfortable being on that stage. Like, I don't want to be standing up there being like, God, I'm dressed like a dork. Like,
yeah.
You know, that you don't need.
Yeah,
extra layer of
or even like
that.
Dressing up, I'm like, oh God, I have like my shirt. It's so dumb, but like, I have this thing with like shirt being tucked in pants.
Yeah.
I hate it because I'm like, I got the illest muffin top that everyone can see, and I don't want that. Like, I don't feel comfortable, so I'm not gonna get on stage, and I will not perform.
Yeah,
you know. Whereas if I'm wearing like what I normally wear, you know, then I'm like, yeah, let's do it, let's play.
Yes,
you know. So yeah. Anyway, so like, yeah, it should be. I want to see all kinds of people playing. I do. I don't want to see all kinds of people dressing exactly the same playing.
No.
That to me is so lame.
Yeah.
It's so lame. Why would you want to do that?
Yeah. And you want to see all types of people because you're going to get better shows. Like, you know, on our team, we have all grown up in very different places.
Oh, yeah.
We have very different backgrounds. We have very different opinions.
Yeah. Different styles, yeah.
Different styles. And that is completely reflective in what
mm-hmm.
we find
mm-hmm.
funny
mm-hmm.
and why we connect on things as well. Like, you know, I think what is wonderful about improv is, like, I don't know if it were for improv where I would ever meet
yeah.
someone on my team. Like,
You're
people on my team from, like, if it wasn't for improv and being here, where would I meet the people on my team
yeah.
who are from, like, Kansas City, Missouri?
Right.
Where would I have ever met
yep.
that? And then I form such a great bond with them.
Yeah.
Or you, like, where would we meet?
No, there. I mean,
and
it's
then
crazy.
Find common ground in our humor, which has been developed in such different places
right.
in such different ways.
Right.
Besides
but,
this thing.
But I think that the idea is, like, even though we are so different, the objective in improv is to connect, right? And we can do that. And how impressive is it to look at people that you're like, these people don't even look like they're friends.
Yeah.
They're not quote-unquote castable friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, a casting agent would freaking shoot himself or herself if they saw us together being like, this is not believable, you
yeah.
know? And yet, we're able to do a kick-ass Harold, you know what I mean? With our points of view still intact, and we're still collaborating on making theater together, making art together.
Yeah.
You know? That's magical.
That's magical.
Where else does that happen?
I don't know.
You know? And it's all us. It's our voice. We're not reading a script.
Yeah.
It's our. We're creating it ourselves.
Yeah.
It's eight writers working together. We looked, act, totally different, and we still able to pull off a successful show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's wonderful.
There's something special about that.
Yeah.
Call me crazy.
No, you're not crazy. And you know what? Gandhi would be proud.
Thank you, Gandhi. This episode is brought to you by Gandhi.
No, that is great, though, that idea of, like, eight writers. I love the idea. Because we are. And that's the thing as well. I think it does encourage you to write.
Yeah,
because you're like, well, I'm doing it right now.
Yeah.
You've written a show
doing
every day
well.
For a year.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's what we... And we're at a writer's meeting. You know what I mean? Like, the stage is a writer. It's happening as...
Yeah. It's the writer's meeting. It's the read-through. It's the performance.
Rehearsal. It's the performers. Yeah, yeah. Which is great.
It's great. Oh. It really is great.
Who needs rehearsals when you have improv, really?
That's great. Ah, this is wonderful. Thank you so much, Oscar. And that was Long Form Conversation.
It's over?
It's over.
Oh my gosh, what?
I know, it goes for so long. It goes so short.
Wow!
God, this has been excruciating. Time does fly when you're having fun, but when you're not, it drags. that was... Let me do this. Oh my God, please turn his mic off.
Please tell me I'm the worst guest ever of all time.
Well, you're the only person I've interviewed. But yeah, you're the worst.
Thanks.
And that was Long Form Conversation. Tune in next episode when Oscar Montoya, he will be your host. Thank you guys so much for listening. Oscar, is there anything you want to plug?
No, just come to Know Me Malone.
And Sugar.
And Sugar, mod night.
What Wednesday night of the month are you
it's
guys?
It's the last Wednesday of the month. So
and
check us out.
Great. Is there anything you want to say specifically to your Danish fans?
Yeah, man, I wish I knew how to speak. What language? Dutch?
Danish? Oh, well, let's just end now because we don't know what we're talking about. Bye. Bye, 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 bye.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.